Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Professors In podcast. I am Dr. Karen Kelski, and as always, I'm delighted that you're here with us today.
And I am Kel Weinold, and I am also delighted that you are here today. Just want to remind you that you can find us at theprofessorsin.com. You can find us on Facebook at The Professors In. You can find us on Twitter at Professors In, and we love to hear from you. We also love to have you join us as a member of our podcast community. For $3.99 a month, you become a member of our Mighty Networks private group.
Just last week, we did an Ask Me Anything with Me.
Yep.
We, in response to a conversation that arose on the page, I made available the recording of a webinar that would normally be $50, and I just put it up there for free to all of our podcast members. In this case, it was surviving your first year on the tenure track, because that's what was asked for. But I'll put up new ones moving forward on a, you know, probably like a biweekly basis.
Yeah, when somebody asks. And then we're also starting, just a reminder, February 5th, Friday, we start returning to our weekly live, recorded live, and which, if you are a podcast member, you can join and hang out as we talk about like we used to do on Facebook Live, except it'll be on Mighty Networks through Zoom, and that's at 9 a.m. Pacific every Friday for 30 minutes. And we never seem to have a shortage of things to talk about.
Well, so plus, everybody, you know, you're going to be able to ask us questions just like on Facebook Live. And frankly, I think the numbers will be fairly small because Mighty Networks is a very small, I mean, not very small, but it's a limited community. It's an intimate community compared to the massive size of Facebook right now. So, yeah, join us.
So, speaking of never any things to talk about, we are going to talk about today gatekeepers. And we're going to.
Which, by the way, arose from a request from one of our Mighty Networks members.
Yes. So, we. And this is going to be kind of a broad range of gatekeepers. And the genesis of it was going back and listening to some podcasts we recorded earlier on that we ended up not running. And then we still have things to say about them that we just recorded them at the very beginning of our process. And we wanted to redo them in a different way. So today we're going to talk about gatekeepers in particular.
Well, I just want to say that we are redoing them in a different way because the recordings date from before George Floyd, before the pandemic, before the election year, and, you know, it's kind
before of... Before the pandemic coup.
Yeah, the pandemic coup. And, you know, the people that we were back then, like our voices, like it's unrecognizable, honestly. And I just think that's a very common and shared experience. Mm-hmm. It's just that I don't know that everybody has an actual recording of themselves. But a lot of people on... Somebody on Facebook was saying they just looked at a photo of themselves from a year ago and they look 5 years, they've aged 5 years in 1 year. And I think that I can identify with that.
Yeah, you know how they say presidents age in their term so dramatically? Basically, I heard somebody say the other day,
Trump didn't
age at all and we all look like Obama, who still is beautiful, but he aged. Yeah. So anyway, so about gatekeepers today, we're going to talk about like at least three different kinds, unless we go on a tangent. So we're going to talk about search committees.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about reviewer two. And we're going to talk about the people trying to keep you from leaving the academy.
So the reverse gatekeeper.
Which
just popped into my mind because of a conversation I had this very morning with someone about her efforts to leave and her very well-intentioned advisor trying to make her stop. And I thought, you know, that's gatekeeping in the other way. So,
exactly.
And one that is more, frankly, more and more urgent to talk about as the imperative to leave the academy for financial security just intensifies. All right. So search committees, gatekeepers, the ultimate gatekeepers in a way, basically determining who was in, who was out.
The thing we talked about before that is always just, so I'm just going to be clear that when I just sort of came up with this idea for gatekeepers, my first title of this podcast was Stop Being an Asshole, because that's really what I'm interested in about gatekeeping is where you are actually, where you're harming people by your either ignorance or your just direct cruelty. Mm-hmm. And I think search committees, what we said in that original podcast and what I still feel like is that search committees do tremendous harm by not following basic social rules. Mm-hmm. If they just followed like basic what your mother taught you
mm-hmm.
rules,
mm-hmm.
we would eliminate a tremendous amount of harm.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys are in charge of who gets to get a job in the academy. When we recorded it, there were just quite a few opportunities, comparatively speaking. Now there's this little tiny thimble full of opportunities. And you have these people who have their whole heart and soul. They've spent hours on their application. They've done all this stuff. And it lands in your lap at your university. Or at first it lands in the electronic mess of your university. So the first place I feel like gatekeepers just fall down is acknowledging you got the damn application.
Mm-hmm. So basically say thank you for your application.
Right. And a lot of that's automated now. Mm-hmm. I understand that. Thank you for your application. But if it's not, if it has to come from your department, I understand right now, you know, now you're getting 1,000 applications when you used to get 100. But there has to be a system for you to acknowledge that people did something,
mm-hmm.
right? Then there comes a time when you do the 15 or the 12 or the 10, right? You decide the long short list, right?
Right. Then inform the other people that you've moved on.
Exactly.
That's really the worst. That's where the jobs wiki has filled in that gap. Because pretty much it's almost universal that nobody tells you that you are no longer under consideration. And people need to know that.
I just can't figure that one out. That one spins me around over and over again because I think, really, have we lost the basic ability to just say thank you? We've chosen our top whatever.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if that has something to do with, you know, we talk so much about how academia is a shame-based system. People do everything possible to avoid facing themselves and their discomfort. And so there's a discomfort in telling people that they didn't get the job.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and this is, so you have to tell, you know, 600 people or 500 or 400 or 300. That's a lot of people. And maybe.
Especially if the email comes back to your inbox, right? If there's not an automated system, and so you have somebody, it's coming from the department chair's email or the search committee chair's email, and you send out 600 emails, even if you automate it, if it comes back, and that person gets, you know, even 100 responses.
Mm-hmm.
It's overwhelming. Right. I get it. So,
right.
So,
but do it anyway, because for heaven's sake.
Or work with your university or your department to say, hey, we need to send this out, mm-hmm. and we need to automate it because I did not want it landed in my email, mm-hmm. but this is basic courtesy.
Right.
I'm going to acknowledge your existence.
Mm-hmm.
The running theme you're going to hear today is like, could we just see each other's humanity?
Show respect. Right. Basic human respect.
Right. So then you have your top 10, you have your long short list, right? You pick your top three. I cannot tell you how many people I've worked with who say, yeah, I made the long short list, but then I never heard anything. How do you have 10 people that you can't get back to 7 of them?
Right.
Right? You can't mm-hmm. write to 7 of them and say thank you mm-hmm. for you know, your application. We've decided to go with three right. other people. Something.
Or, you know, I know that they want to keep some folks as backups, and that's fine.
And you can
But you can say that.
Yeah.
You can actually say to 2 or 3 of them, well, I don't know what legally appropriate right. language is, and the, you know, the HR will know what that is, so I can't really quote it here. But basically, you can say something. Thank you for your interest. You are still under consideration. We will let you know in February.
Yep. And then there's the last stage, right? You actually bring people to campus, or you have a Zoom all day, Zoom virtual campus interview. And then you don't tell the people you didn't choose.
And that I find shocking.
That one. And that happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not even weird. It's mm-hmm. it's unusual, but it's not
right.
It's not as rare as it should be.
Right.
But the thing, go ahead.
Well, I kind of wanted to move on away from, because I think we've pretty much hammered home the point is, just for heaven's sake, tell them that I wanted to move on to something new.
Okay.
Well, I wanted to talk about gatekeeping. So there's much more that we can talk about in terms of bad behavior of search committees. There's much more in terms of, like a lot of things. But I don't want to move past it without also talking about the ways that gatekeeping is also happens in this, in a subtle and indirect way, in the sense of how you're evaluating
yes.
the records. And in fact, I'm giving a talk tomorrow at a university that invited me specifically to speak to what they're calling campus leaders, which means department heads, program chairs, and deans. I think it goes up to deans. In any case, it's quite a large group. And the reason that what they're asking me to talk about is, how should we evaluate tenure and promotion files under A, COVID, and B, in light of systemic racism? Mm-hmm. And basically, when I had the pre-talk to find out what they wanted, the issue was, everybody says we want diversity. We hire people and they do come. And so we have like a larger number of faculty of color than we've ever had. But then every time they go up through their second year review and their tenure review, suddenly it's imposing the same old, same old.
Yep.
Expectations of productivity. But the faculty of color don't confront the same conditions of productivity that white faculty do.
Yep.
And it's because of so many things like service requirements that are uncompensated and unrecognized, and the need to mentor traumatized students of color who are turning to you because, and there's so few of you that the burden is great in a way that white faculty never confront, and the imperative to serve on every committee because every committee needs a person of color, and on and on and on. And program building. Oh, we need a new Black Studies major. Can you do that, please? Thanks. In addition to trying to get tenure in English. And it's like, you know, all of those things. And yet nobody gets, and also service and teaching, community service, and all of these things, even and systemic bias and access to funding, for example. Mm-hmm. All of these things play into it. And so then that's the gatekeeping at hiring and, of course, at tenure and promotion, where standards and criteria have to be more flexible.
Right. Well, and I think that when you're looking at these questions of where you're gatekeeping. So let's just talk to the gatekeepers for a minute. And somebody brought this up on the Mighty Networks page, is how do we get people, how do we get the gatekeepers to reflect on what they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
To do the mindfulness work, basically, to be curious about their own response.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hear story after story after story about people who are not chosen. And the feedback they get is, we didn't think you'd be happy. We didn't think you'd stay. We didn't think... You know, we thought, so there's all this filling in about these people's lives, and they end up, you end up gatekeeping people out with your own thoughts about them, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, I just worked with a client who was interviewing at a major international university. She ticked all of the boxes, everything. And what she didn't tick was the white male to go with all the other white males. So everybody on the search committee is a reflection of you, and you gravitate toward the reflection of you. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do the work, mm-hmm. to sit with that and look at that and say, why am I attracted to that person? Mm-hmm. Why do I want that person? Mm-hmm. And what story am I telling about their fit?
Mm-hmm.
Then you are becoming a gatekeeper around diversity. Because diversity is uncomfortable, mm-hmm. because you don't recognize how that person operates in the world.
Yeah.
And so while you don't seem like you fit can be stunningly coded language, mm-hmm. for you don't seem like you fit because you're, you know, too queer, you're too, yeah. this, you're too that. So that you hit on it, Karen, that's the moment of the true gatekeeping.
I just read the most really a horrifying piece of writing that was on Medium, and I'm sorry I don't remember the author's name, but she was basically a managing editor of The Atlantic under James Bennett. And he went on and ended up getting fired, but ended up at the New York Times, where he again got fired for publishing that Tom Cotton op-ed. And he was a misogynistic abuser.
Mm-hmm.
And she writes, her career was destroyed. He destroyed her. She, you know, she was at the top of her field and he destroyed her. And she describes these encounters in that office. It's not academia, but it's academia adjacent, you know, like the Atlantic editorial offices, where he and a group of the male editors would open a bottle of bourbon and start doing shots or whatever. Do you do shots of bourbon? I don't know. Anyway,
it'd be very unpleasant.
Yeah, whatever. Bourbon. It involved bourbon, and they had carte blanche entree into his office, in and out all day, but she did not. But, even though she had actually higher status than them, but she had to make an appointment. She was, when they opened the bottle of bourbon and she walked over, they didn't offer her any bourbon. They didn't want her there, and that's just the tip of the iceberg of all the things that happened. But it's like, I, you know, you. look like me. You're a guy like, you're a white guy like me. There are literally incalculable places of commonality that we can just rest easy in, mm-hmm. to recognize in one another. And you just make me, you're not right. You what? I don't know how to talk to you. I'm afraid I'll say something wrong. Or I hate you. I hate you because of who you are. Right. I mean, there's a whole range. Some right. people are really well-intentioned. Others are really vile and evil.
Right.
But the point is it's all gatekeeping.
Right. And it's all minus reflection. I think that's the part,
yeah.
the part that I have the hardest time with it, is that if you stopped for a moment and saw the person that you were engaging with in their full humanity, this is a whole person sitting here interviewing with you. It's a whole person who went through all these meetings, who did all these things, who went to dinner with you. I mean, back when we used to do that in search committees, right? Who did all those things. And then you're going to get together as a group and you're going to say, I don't think she'll be happy here because X, Y, and Z. You've now narrowed her humanity down to one thing, right? Because she does radical politics and your department doesn't. But you knew that when you brought her in.
Mm-hmm.
Why'd you bring her in?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you just say up front, hey, you know what? We're just going to bring in the three white guys who do exactly what we did, or the three white women, or the three mm-hmm. whatever. I'm not.
Except that, you know, then, there's the rules on paper of HR or affirmative right. action. So they're like, oh, yeah, here's somebody.
Right. But there's nothing from the beginning that you're thinking about, like, really, I want to do this. So there's that gatekeeping in the search committee. There's that gatekeeping at the tenure process. I also just want to, I know you talked about the toll, Karen, but mm-hmm. I just also want to acknowledge for those of you out there who are on tenure and who are on search committees, but especially who are on tenure and promotion committees, the lack of public conversation around the toll for faculty of color in predominantly white institutions, until we can start talking about what it's like to spend your day in those institutions and how that kind of stress affects your productivity. And, you know, any of you who are running those universities or deans in those universities, call me, because I can talk to you about what you're doing that is defeating your stated goal, which is bringing in, diversifying, and retaining faculty of color. So hit me up and I'll point you in the direction of scholars or consultants of color I can point you in the direction of people who can help you figure out how to do it better. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Yeah.
So search committees do better basically yeah. on every end, from the responding to people to really want to encourage you to explore, like actually sit and notice and tease apart your response to people. Why am I responding that way? Get curious about yourself and your own behaviors instead of just assuming that your response and your critique mm-hmm. is true.
And what worked for you is best moving forward. And that's even for really well-intentioned people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not even just the sort of evil or like that pathological, well, I suffered, so you have to suffer too. It's even just, you know, I get that, you know, the just counting the number of peer-reviewed publications and the rank of the journal is what counted for me and for me coming up. And but right now it's 2021 and we're in a full-blown crisis and something needs to change. So I'm going to be part of the change.
Right. So yeah.
It could even be a political move.
Right.
As yeah. much as a personal growth move or, you know, I mean, well, it is a political move in terms of your department and your discipline, but it's also a political move in terms of really like as a country, we're on the knife's edge in terms of what we believe in and what we stand for. And this kind of gatekeeping may seem small, but it's not.
And that brings us to our favorite nemesis,
mm-hmm.
Reviewer 2.
Mm-hmm.
Which you all get that if we've come to a place in this industry that you have a name for something, like that the whole you know, academic industrial complex right. understands reviewer two.
Right.
That's
kind of a structural problem.
That's a problem. Like, this isn't just some random, right. you know, dude who's mad. This is really mm-hmm. a problem. Mm-hmm. And so one of the questions that we got was, how do I get past the barrier that is reviewer two? So I've sent in my work and I got two people gave reasonable feedback and another person was just brutal and mm-hmm. vicious. And I think, what? So when I hear that, I hear the things that people write to other human beings about their work, I think, who hurt you? First of all, that's the first thing I think. But then I think, what's your goal? Like, what mm-hmm. is your goal?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my thinking has changed. And I think I'm going to try and articulate it. Because in a way, I think what I'm about to say sounds completely obvious, and like everybody else was way ahead of me on this, and maybe you were, and so if so, I apologize. But little by little, over the last couple months, I have gone from just intellectually understanding to at a gut level grasping that the cruelty of the Trump administration and the people who aligned with him, including the white people who have no money and no financial security and, you know, should not be identifying with the GOP at all, but are ever more attached, that the cruelty is the point, as everybody was saying, right. all through. The cruelty is the point. And the reason the cruelty is the point is because the cruelty shows that you're in a position to enact cruelty. So you can. And by virtue of these words coming out of my mouth, I am confirming my status as a person who can.
Right.
And so for those white, predominantly white people, it's, well, I'm white, and so I can. And white supremacy allows me to do this. And it allows me to do this with the assumption of safety from the cops and all of these other cascading outcomes that we've seen, you know, revealed, that we already knew about. But in any case, I think the joy of it, the pleasure of it, is that doing it is a reaffirmation of the identity. This little bit of power may only be a little bit, may be all you have, but God damn it, you have it. And I think that reviewer two is the same thing, that the cruelty is the point. I can do this.
Right. And I think this for me resonates in that article that I sent you that I keep asking you if you've read, but I know you haven't.
I did
yet.
Read it.
Oh, you did? Read. Yeah. So this was on 538.com. And I don't, just to be fair, or just to be clear, I don't know what 538 is. So
it's Nate Silver's thing.
Okay.
Pulling site. But okay. but it hosts a bunch of cultural commentary.
This is a really interesting thing on research. This is based on research by Maggie Kurth and Amelia Thompson DeVoe. And it's looking at the research around the topic. The article title is Our Radicalized Republic. And what struck me about that is her talking about just that, mm-hmm. of people getting to a point where they are that same kind of like, I'm over here and this is it. And I want you to be harmed. Mm-hmm. I actually want you to be harmed.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that a little bit more distressing, I guess, now that you're saying that. But it doesn't surprise me because I walked through the academy for years and I saw people be mean just to be mean.
Mm-hmm.
So of course it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know what the answer. So I guess if I go back to that person, I think, wow, I don't know if the person just wants to be mean. And then I think, okay, reviewer two, I'm talking to you. Check yourself. Like, mm-hmm. what? Why are you making the comment you're writing? If for me as an editor for years and years and years and years is, why are you putting this in here?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm editing something and I'm commenting on it, why is it in there?
Mm-hmm.
It damn well better be to improve the
mm-hmm.
piece.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Right.
That's it. Because if it's there to shame you,
right.
if it's there to bully you, to put you in, to get you to follow my agenda,
mm-hmm.
then I failed.
I suppose it's worthwhile to think about reviewer two in a paradigm of abuser and what makes people become abusive and what are they you know, and I mean, we know that abused people abuse. And I, that's not to say, oh, we have to look at their history. What I mean is that there something has, and if we think about them like Trump supporters or whatever, it's the sense of, you know, they clearly feel extremely powerless at some very profound level.
We could look at the systemic
Wendell Holmes, that the battles are so vicious because the stakes are so small. It's really the question of, you know, clearly these people feel very powerless, because the more powerless you feel, the more likely you are to be, to act out and victimize others who you perceive as having less power. And of course, anyone submitting an article at that moment, even if they're a tenured professor, at that moment, they're vulnerable.
Right. So I could also look, so if we talk about that idea of just sort of your behaving, how you were treated, or you've reached the limits, I think you could also look, put it back on the systemic abuse and cruelty of the academy, but you can also look at the just sheer overwork.
Mm-hmm.
And think about how many times in your life you have been pushed to the limit on work, right? Let's just take it to the domestic. Mm-hmm. You're trying to make dinner. You're trying to answer your mother's phone call. You're trying not to trip over the pets in the kitchen.
No, this is not referring to anything specific.
And somebody comes in and is like, can I show you this thing on Twitter? It's like, no, you can have this massive reactivity where you just want to pop off at somebody. So I totally can see how then, you know, you're under this pressure. You have no time. Somebody submits an article. You start reading it. You're irritated. And then you start seeing the problems with it. And you're like, God damn it. I do not have time for this mm-hmm. shit. And you sort of take it out on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's totally human.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
And I think it's our moment to, again, for it to pause and say, yeah, I'm really frustrated that this person basically missed this key theorist. And why are you even writing? And who said you could be here? And I will tell you, I would have those thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I would have those thoughts. I was like, oh, fuck, come on. I've got 30 minutes and you have not even engaged X. Fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
What? There's a difference between that initial rage mm-hmm. response and acting on it.
You know, I think that's really important, because I am casting my mind back to all the times that I did review articles, and so many of them are so bad. And
that's okay, because you're learning, so don't keep that from submitting.
Right, right. Yeah, no.
I'm just saying to the people out there who heard that and thought, oh, no, it's too bad to submit.
No, you try, and you get better for trying. That, you know, I do get mad. I get mad.
Yeah,
there's no question I get mad. And in fact, the last article I reviewed, and I still do review the occasional article, usually from scholarship that's on job placement in the academy. That's what I'm asked to do now. I was so mad. I was marching around the house. Did I actually like tell you about it?
No,
like
how? But I don't tend to notice the individual marching around anymore.
Like, how would you distinguish one from the other?
Who are you mad at today?
Anyway, and the thing is, and this is very much akin to what I talked about. I think it was last week's episode of how my initial, I come in hot, I come in angry, I come in hypercritical. I've always been like that. And I get it all out of my system. I put it all down in the email. And then I stop. I remember that I have this problem. And I say, Karen, you're doing that thing again. And then I go up and then I add another entire paragraph at the top. I insert it after the fact of praise and appreciation, and which are not fake. They're not fake. It's just that for people who are hypercritical like me, they're not the first place we go. So you have to dig deeper. And I think there are other, in fact, I know other people who are the exact polar opposite. They're not in academia. They're really not in academia. These are like friends who are nurses or and so on. But that their first impulse is the nice.
Right.
And they have to dig really, really deep to try to dredge up something to be critical about. Well, I'm the exact opposite of that. So I have to dredge up the stuff. But once I see it, I see it. It's like, oh my God, you did do all this stuff right. This is all great. Great contribution. So and so. It's all genuine, all sincere. I never lie. I never flatter. But then I say, okay. And then transition sentence. However, there are some problems with this that need to be dealt with before it's publishable. And then I list them out. And then I look at my language. And if I have anything where I'm like, you know, this was on a, you know, high school level, I'm like, okay, that's kind of shitty. No, I'll take that out. I'll rephrase it. And these are things I've learned over many years. So when I was younger and less secure, a young, you know, junior faculty, I think I was much shittier. In fact, I was shitty a lot.
Right. And I think that if you went back, if you ever had the motivation to, if you went back and looked at your early responses to clients when we first started professors in, that you were just like, this is unacceptable. Right. This will never get you. I mean, so you sort of came in swinging, and I think that you've adjusted. So I'm saying that as all of you out there who are looking and saying, wow, maybe I have been really shitty in my comments. And so we live and we learn and we try to do it differently. So you don't have to stay shitty is what I'm saying. You can actually start to see people's humanity and recognize that they're in an incredibly vulnerable place, and submitting an article. And I said it last week and I'll say it every week. Article, people who do academic writing are creatives. There's no difference between an article and a painting or a sculpture. It's something out of nothing. And it's vulnerable. It is handing over your thinking for someone else to look at. So come into that relationship with mutual respect. Come into that relationship saying, wow, you took a risk. I'm going to engage with you. And if they have a problem, help them get better rather than just take out your frustrations. And I know you have them. I have them. We all do. I think Karen brings up a really good point that we just sometimes our tendency is to come in hot. And I mean, with you, I would say it's that same level of stress. It's like, there's so many things pulling at me. I don't have time for this shit.
Mm-hmm. The point I was intending to make and then got a little distracted is that I get really angry when I see, like, say, back in the day when I would review Japan or Anthro stuff, that I would get really angry because I cared really deeply about my field and what I felt was the right and the wrong way to do it and what that meant. And when I saw people, and especially also as the professor is in, when I see people doing it badly, and what I mean by badly would be something like, how are you not aware that there's this entire body of literature that's been talking directly about your topic and you have cited none of it. Right. And sometimes now as the professor is in, I work with clients and realize they went through their whole doctoral training and never got told to read entire bodies of literature. And then I'm angry at their advisors who I don't even know, but I'm so angry. But, you know, so sometimes I remember I do have this very righteous anger. The discipline deserves better than this. How are you not doing this right? But that's still not an excuse to be a jerk. There is simply no excuse be a jerk to another human.
And I think that the thing that your sentence in there is just so telling is like, I think there's a way it should be done. This is what is required. I think there's a way that should be done and a way it shouldn't be done. So you're coming into that. Mm-hmm. So you come into the equation, you come into the relationship minus curiosity, but with an agenda, right? So if you are coming in to review an article, look at someone's work, give feedback on their writing, and you are coming in not with curiosity about what they've done, but an agenda about how it should be done, you're already in gatekeeper, punishing gatekeeper instead of feedback gatekeeper.
Well, I think all reviewers have an agenda. Yeah. They believe in the field. Their job is to gatekeep in a way.
Right, but if we're going to do it.
I mean, there's a sense that, because they have to establish their task is this legitimate scholarship? Yeah. Is it appropriate scholarship for this journal?
Right.
Does it advance the field? So they are making judgment calls, and some are worse and some are bad. I mean, some are good and some are bad. What am I trying to say? Some do those things, some manuscripts do, and some do not reach that level. And so we're talking two different things here, really. It's both. If you have to tell someone that the article isn't good enough in its current form
do it kindly.
Yeah, for publication in this journal at this time, do it kindly.
Right.
That's definition one,
right,
or advice one or whatever. But advice two is make sure that you are aware of other agendas beyond the broad one.
Right.
That you're not just
carrying along. Yeah.
That you're not trying to impose you know, an incredibly rigid, inflexible view of what constitutes a legitimate scholarship or a contribution to
your field. I would want the curiosity of what's legitimate. Because if we're going to go back to the question that we just put on search committees, I have a question all the time about how forcing everyone into a particular way of thinking and producing that work in the same way all the time continues to perpetuate a white male conversation that's saying you must learn to think and communicate these things the way that we do for it to be legitimate. So I would want reviewers, if you want to start radicalizing that a little bit, start questioning, what does legitimate mean? Like, does it have to be in this order? Does it have to be this thing? Because the takeaway of an article, because I've seen some terrible articles published, but they've been published because they had a really clear argument that they were making that was engaging with the field. So if that's the goal, clear argument, engaging with the field, moving it forward. Okay, that's the goal. Everything else is just your weird construct. So, I mean, I know that's just throwing bombs into the middle of it, but I do think it's a thing. If you disrupt your thinking that completely, maybe it'll get you to notice where you're really hidebound and you're punishing people with your idea. So,
yeah. But the bottom line, though, is really, I mean, because we're now in a complete gray area that cannot really be legislated.
Right.
Certainly not on a podcast.
Kindness can.
But kindness can't.
Right.
Kindness can be legislated.
Recognize that
it's
right
like
as humanity.
Just be kind.
Quit being a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen. I would like to see a time when people say, oh, reviewer two, and the whole academy goes, what's that? I would love that. What was the last thing we were going to talk about?
Well, the gatekeeping of people, stopping people from leaving the academy. But,
okay, we're going to talk about
barring
that.
The gates, you cannot leave.
Okay, we have to talk about that later because this has run long.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, bummer. Yeah. Okay, but let's do it. We'll do it next time. That'll
we'll
be
talk
our
about, we'll go back to like,
barring
hey,
the gates from having a healthy and
leave.
Happy life.
There's no job here. You've already sacrificed years of your life. You can't leave. All right, folks. We'll see you next time.
Bye.